Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Surfacing, The Meaning in the Story, a Mental Health Association of Westchester production. I'm your host, Jenna, as always joined by our producer, Dustin.
Hey, Jenna, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dustin. How are you today?
Doing pretty good.
Good. Well, we are continuing to hear positive feedback from you all, and it's really encouraging to hear that you're resonating with the stories of our guests and the hopefulness that they portray. Please also remember to leave a review and rating on Apple, because this will help more people find our podcast, and we want these stories out there. Today, we are joined by Joseph Engelhart, who's the principal of Alexander Hamilton High School, right here in our backyard in Elmsford, New York. Dustin, we had so much fun talking to Joe, right?
We sure did. It was great.
His energy, humor, and most importantly, his passion for the work he does honestly just radiates through this entire interview. I feel like everyone's going to want him in their teenagers' lives after listening to this.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, the way that he shares how an experience in his own early adulthood shaped his approach to teaching is truly inspiring. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So we're excited to get to know you a little more and hear your story. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you today and who you are, what you do?
So I'm 37 years old, and I am the proud principal of Alexander Hamilton High School. First, I was a business major in college. I worked in finance for a little while and in the business world. And then I decided to become a teacher. After teaching for a little while, I got into administration. I was the assistant principal at a school. And now I'm in my fourth year as a principal.
Awesome. So high school principal too. So that I'm sure keeps you on your toes.
A little bit. Yeah, the students definitely keep me on my toes, but I enjoy every second of it. I'm very lucky to work in such a great community with the most amazing students.
Yeah. And so this is in Elmsford, right?
Absolutely.
Elmsford, New York, right in our backyard.
Absolutely. It's the jewel of Westchester, Elmsford. And at Alexander Hamilton High School, it's 7 through 12. So it's a beautiful mix of middle school and high school students. And they just really are so supportive of one another. Mm-hmm. And our community is just gold. I mean, talk about a supportive community who really cares about their students and education. It's a really beautiful place, Elmsford.
That's great. Sounds amazing. I always find that when someone makes a huge career shift, there's usually a story that goes along with that. So tell us more about how you came to that decision.
Yeah. So I had a friend who I knew was addicted to drugs and alcohol. He was in and out of rehab, and he wanted to come visit me at college. And he always shared with me that he thought I would be a great teacher. I'd be a great teacher. I said, "Oh no, teaching, that's not for me, right? That's not for me." And, unfortunately, he did come visit me at school, but while he was at school, he had died of an overdose. So It was something that I kind of wore on my shoulders for my entire life, and I promised his mother that I would do everything in my life to kind of honor him. And that's why I became a teacher after I left the world of finance after a couple of years, because I just wanted to honor that promise that I made. And that, you know, every day I look in the mirror and I want to do what I know that he wanted to do. And I take on each task. I really embrace his energy, because he was such an amazing young man, and he always, you know, valued me as a friend, because no matter what his issues were or his hardships were, I never looked at him differently. I never treated him differently. Mm-hmm. And he always said that was why I would be an amazing teacher. So I credit him for where I am right now. Also my family, my wife and my children. I have two daughters, and without their support, I wouldn't be in the position that I am now either.
That's great. And I mean, what a story. How old were you when that happened?
I was 19 years old.
Okay.
I had known him from when I was like 6 years old. So we had like a 13-year friendship.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long time. What do you remember thinking at that time? Or, you know, how were you sort of processing that experience?
Yeah, it was hard. I don't even remember. I don't even know if I did process it until like the next day, because it was about 2:30 in the morning. And for me, I think when I first heard the news, I was like, nah, like you probably have the wrong person. Like it can't be, mm-hmm. right? Like no way. And like, yeah, it's not a student who goes here. We know it's your friend. It was a very small school I went to. And I was just like very confused. And I knew he had, right? I knew he came with these issues, right? So, but I still didn't want to believe it.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, so where is he? Let's go. I went to the hospital and everything. And he identified my buddy. And the next step, I had to call his mother.
Yeah.
And I remember I just had this knot in my throat and I didn't even know what to say. And I was like, I just have to just call her.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell her what happened. So I make the phone call and she picked up and she's like, I know what happened. I was like, did somebody call you? She's like, you wouldn't be calling me at 2:30 in the morning if something really bad.
Right.
And I said, I was about to say that I'm really sorry, it's all my fault. Don't say what you're going to say. It's not you. She's like, I had a feeling it was going to happen. But I didn't want him not to have a normal life anymore. And I owed that to him. Mm. It's not you, you know, just don't own it. And she's like, I'm going to come up now. Just tell me where you are.
Yeah.
And I just remember being really, really sad, you know, and just owning it.
Of course,
you know,
yeah.
Still to this day, just kind of owning that. And I know people say, oh, it's not your fault, it's not this, not that. But, you know, what could have I done previous as a better friend or a better person within the moment? I remember then at the funerals when I told her that. Gave a eulogy and I promised his mother that I would become a teacher and I would be a teacher just like he wanted to be a teacher. And he wanted to work with a certain demographic of students who were not afforded the same opportunity as maybe he was. Mm-hmm. So he definitely was like a social justice warrior. So I wanted to take that on in his name as well.
Wow.
And it was just, you know, every day it's not, never gets better. Never forget it type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that I live with and, you know, not that I break down crying every morning, but it puts things in perspective.
Right.
When something like that happens and, you know, I remember one of our other close friends who told me, you know, Joe, this could either consume you as a person or you could make it make you better. And you can use that to fuel something inside of you and make a positive change, make a positive impact. And I kind of always remember that. And I think that's kind of ingrained in part of me now where, you know, even when I'm speaking to some students here, I tell them like, listen, I know that you're doing A, B, and C, and those aren't the right things that you should be doing. I'm gonna help you. You know, even if I have to go to your house, even if I have to connect you with somebody, even if I have to sit with you every morning and talk to you, even if I need to come, you know, you need to come to my office at the end of the day and we need to just talk things out, because you know I won't fail twice is kind of my verbiage to them. And I think it's always important for students to know where you come from and who you are as a person. And kind of open up to them because we always as educators want our students to open up to us, but you know, what are we depositing for them? I think is an important piece as well.
Yeah, it's so much easier for someone to connect with you and open up to you if they know there's something there that is a similarity or a thread that they can relate to something. But yeah, I mean, I think just thinking about how you, your initial reaction to what happened was to kind of look back, you know, you're looking back of what could I have done? Could I have said anything, done anything at any point in time that might have prevented this? And so natural for people to do that, right? But then at a certain point, you turned that corner and started thinking about, okay, well, whether there was or wasn't anything that I or anyone else or, you know, just circumstances in his life could have happened before, it can't now. And so I'm going to look at what I can do moving forward to carry on. So that's fantastic. I love that. So it sounds like for you, that happened during your eulogy. So like while you were writing it or while you were giving it, when did you have that recognition?
I didn't write anything down.
Okay.
I wasn't even planning on saying anything. And I kind of just got up there. I felt like it was the right thing, right moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got into, you know, what a beautiful person he was. What he always did for others, how he inspired me. I remember he was always, you know, he was always that guy who he knew maybe I wasn't the best player waiting to be picked up by a team, but he would always pick me first. Just
because I love that. Yeah.
Why do you pick and go? Mm-hmm. You're picking it close to like the bottom. Like, why are you picking it first? There's so many better players. it was, you know, even though we were the same age, I always kind of like looked at him as almost like an older brother. Mm-hmm. We were younger, but as we got older, you know, I had moved away, he had moved away from where we grew up, and we kind of had a different friendship where, you know, he kind of always looked at me for advice. That dynamic changed, and, you know, I just never forgot how he treated me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even how his mother kind of brought me in and helped inspire me to be just a better person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we don't just learn that from our parents, but from what we can learn from the folks' parents as well.
Sure, from our community and all those that are around us. Yeah.
So it was one of those things that when I just felt that as I was speaking, I didn't want his life to just die there, and I wanted it to be carried on. I felt almost a responsibility to do so. So that's
right. Well, and it sounds like it really influences how you interact with your students as well. And I mean, I think we can all agree that middle school, high school, those are tough years. There's so much change that's happening. I mean, I know for myself, sometimes I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do when my kids are teenagers? That's going to be so hard.
Yeah, so. it's the wellness piece is, in addition, right? Because, you know, something that I implement here is Wellness Wednesdays. I know that you were a part of it back in December. And just providing opportunities for students for mental health awareness and creating those safe spaces for students. And, you know, providing families and students with resources to be able to really address issues or provide them with resources where they could seek help, and also showing the students here that, you know, they can come to me for help as well. I'm here for them, right? I'm not just that principal who's going to sit behind my desk to make sure everything is going well. You know, I like that personal interaction. I like to get to know my students at a very deep, intimate level. And I think that that's important because it shows that we care about each other, and we want to also be that role model for the students that we serve.
So how long did you say you've been a principal now?
So I was an assistant principal for 4 years, and this is now my fourth year as a principal here.
Fourth. Okay. So I'm sure you've seen a lot of outcomes come from this. So like, what have you noticed in the students since you've implemented these Wellness Wednesdays? And
yeah, so the unfortunate thing is that we're in this environment right now with the pandemic, and students are on the screens in their home, and I completely, you know, families wanting to keep their students home.
Yeah.
I just don't know how they do it. I applaud the students. I applaud the families, because I know if it was me, right, if it was me in high school, I don't know where I would be. I don't know if I'd be in school. I don't know if I'd be home. I don't know what my mental health meter would be right now, what zone I would be in, green or red, every day as we kind of identify those. So it's really tough for me to wrap my head around because I never lived or was never a student like this, right? I connect with students. Listen, I failed the class before. I've been suspended before. I've been through it all, I feel like. So I could connect with students on many, many levels. Something I don't know what it's like is to be in 11th grade or 8th grade or a senior and be in this type of environment. So it's really tough for me. And that's like a privileged thing to say, oh, it's really tough for me, but it's also really even more so for the students where, I mean, take my seniors right now, they've been in this environment since their end of their junior year.
Right.
Not only did, my seniors last year lost half of their senior years and my heart goes out to them, but my seniors this year, it's been their entire year and half of their junior year. And for them, many of them haven't stepped foot in the building since last March. And that's almost a year.
I know.
It's really, really, really tough. Hard to believe. Socially, emotionally, mentally. So it's, my heart goes out to all students right now who are going through this, not just, the seniors, but K-12, not just here in Elmford, all schools where we really, it's the toughest time now than ever for our students.
Right. And so you bring into this position, clearly, all of the experiences that you have had in your life. And so one of the pivotal ones being what happened with your friend, and which gave you the ability to look at an individual, whether it be a student or whoever, and see beyond just whatever the behavior is going on and see past that to the actual human that's there and how their own experiences have shaped who they are. What are some of the other things from your life that have brought you to this point of really being able to be so in tune with what students need and how to respond to them in a way that's going to allow them to thrive and be well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, I was a handful. It was trouble when I was younger. I cut class. I had the mindset of if you can give me the exam and I can get an 80 on it, why do I need to come to class? Until I got the pre-calc, right? But I think that, for me, I was suspended for school for cutting class. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was suspended for cutting class, I thought to myself, so let me get this straight. If I continue to cut class, now I don't even need to come to school at all. Got it. Okay. All right. Awesome. Well, if you told me that earlier, I would have just stayed home from the beginning. I say that joking around, but it's like, so a student's doing this wrong and you're giving them the consequence of what they're doing wrong.
Right. I know.
And to me, it never made sense. Now to me, right, like it's a privilege to be educated right now as an educator, as an adult, it kind of makes more sense. But I refuse to suspend students from my school. If you make a threat against the school or against a teacher, my hands are tied there. But in terms of cutting class, like I remember how I was treated and probably how many students were treated and probably still are treated who are cutting classes. Why don't we find out why you're cutting class? Is it because you don't understand the material? Okay, fine. So let's get you support with that. Is there something with the teacher? So let's have like a restorative circle with the teacher. Is there something else, right, that's going on? Are you leaving to go do something because you need to get a job to help support your family, right? So there's all these things that you kind of have to be aware about and really connect with the student at a personal level to really understand them and to connect with them. I also think that it's important to note it about like drug and alcohol. Right. So not saying publicly that I was suspended for school for drug and alcohol, but there, I do know some cases where students are suspended for drugs and alcohol, bringing them to school.
Yeah.
And I always kind of wondered why. Right. So here's a student who clearly has access to drug and alcohol, is clearly using drugs and alcohol. And there's a comfort level, right? Bringing it, right. Not only do they have access, but they have a comfort level. So We catch a student, let's say, with marijuana, right, or a vape pen, maybe a bottle of booze, right, they bring it to school. And the immediate reaction of most is, let's suspend this child. 5 days sometimes with the superintendent suspension. So here we are suspending a student who is using drugs, mm-hmm. who has access to it, and is comfortable carrying it with them. Typically, those students, right, statistically, are not also doing well in school. So when you suspend the student who might have an addiction or might just have a comfort level in using drugs and send them out of school, the first thing they're doing is not cracking open their Algebra 1 book or reading The Great Gatsby. Mm-hmm. Most likely, they are doing the same thing that you're suspending them for. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where the suspension to prison pipeline comes into play. Right. So instead, we provide support to our students, connect them with the drug and alcohol counselor, mandated sessions, remove suspension, speak to the student. Why are they using drugs, right? Is it a confidence thing? Mm-hmm. Is somebody pushing it on them? So I think that we really need to understand our youth more so now than ever, especially as we start to transition out of this pandemic and really lead with a heart mm-hmm. and an understanding of what is best for students. Not what's best for me as a principal, right? Not what power I have as a principal or as an educator. Mm-hmm. Really doing what's best for students. And if you always do what's best for students, you're never going to fail them.
Right, because isn't that the goal all along, really?
And for me, a lot of these rules never made sense to me as a student. And part of the reason I wanted to get into administration is because I wanted to change the game for students. Mm-hmm. And there are students that, you know, I've supported along my journey. And a lot of them are like, you know, Mr. Engelhardt, without you, if there was another person as my teacher or principal or assistant principal, I probably would be home getting high right now. So thank you. You know, I really appreciate you getting me the help, putting a book in my hand, teaching me about stocks, telling me that I could be an entrepreneur, telling me that, you know what, maybe I actually can do this. Thank mm-hmm. you for being the one who believed in me. And I think that that belief and that allowing students to dream and being that inspiration and telling them, listen, I know you can, right, do mm-hmm. that. Sometimes that's all they need to hear.
100%. And they know it because they're feeling and experiencing it. But research shows it as well. I mean, just that presence of one stable, caring adult in a child's life can protect against a whole slew of other negative experiences that they may have had in their childhood. So it really is so inspiring to hear you talk about what you're doing, your approach. And I love that it was born out of the experiences that you had in your life because it's so genuine. And not everybody has had those experiences. So I hope that there are people too who can listen to this and get a different perspective as well. That this is not just about rules and punishment. This is about understanding where somebody's coming from and creating an environment for them where they're the most likely to succeed and thrive.
Yeah. And it's what my father always told me. He said, you never can look at situations as the glass is half full or the glass is half empty. But you got to look at what you have in the cup and decide what you want to do with it. Because it's up to you. Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, another analogy that, you know, I've heard along my travels is, you know, we're all dealt different hands, right?
Yeah.
In life. And sometimes we're held good hands or bad hands, but it's sometimes what you do with your hand, right? That you're dealt. And I think they're kind of the same to me. And as it relates back to students, how can we support them so they could make the best decisions? How can we support them so they know that there's somebody in their corner? Because mm-hmm. I always tell my students, you didn't make a mistake, right? This is just a learning experience. And we're mm-hmm. all going to go through that because we don't make mistakes. We live life and we have learning experiences.
I love that. That's fantastic. You need to put that on your wall or something. Make a poster out of it, a bumper sticker, something.
my friends all tease me. They say, Joe, you know, you should write a book called From Being Suspended to Never Suspending. So
I love that.
There you go. There's the episode title.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Coming out in 2023.
there has to be a, the students have to really appreciate that, because it's probably so different than what they're used to or what they expect, especially with, you know, your experience, and you know exactly what they're talking about. You can emphasize with them. You can look past what others might just look and see, you know, if they're using drugs or alcohol, they might just see that, but you can look past that and ask why, or what can I do to help? It's gotta be such a different experience for them. And one, I have to imagine they really do appreciate it. And hopefully they tell you that. I'm sure not all of them do, but I would say most really have to like that about you.
Yeah. And that's something that I love about the job, right? Is, and I don't even look at it as a job, but the position and the interactions I have with students. And it's very telling when students say, you know what, Mr. Englehart, I always thought a principal was A, B, and C, but you've proven that wrong. Like, I consider you my friend. I consider you my uncle. I consider you a father figure. I consider you this. You're always in my corner. You always have my back. And even as a teacher, you know, I taught in the Lower East Side, and I taught in Brooklyn. And, you know, there were students who, you know, during the year, they're like, Mr. Englehart, why are you coming to my project building at 4 o'clock to tutor me? Like, leave me alone. I missed the homework last night. It's not that serious. But at the end of the year, they're like, you really do care about me. Like, why do you care so much? And I said, because you're worth it. Right. And I think that sometimes students just need not only to hear that, but for all of us to show that, right? Because we always want ourselves to be the best version of ourselves, but we want our youth to be the best version of ourselves, because it's just going to make our future better.
So I'm interested to hear that brief period of time where you were in the finance world. What did that feel like?
That was easy. That was a cakewalk. You know, go in, put on a suit and tie, crunch some numbers, sit in front of an Excel spreadsheet. You know, help build a PR firm, whatever it took. That was easy breezy. Teaching and you know, being an administrator, it's actual, you know, hard work. But yeah, there's nothing more rewarding, and there's nothing I'd rather do with my life than that. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a firm believer, and there's no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. And I think that there's a reason that I'm in front of these students every day. There's a reason I'm here in Elmsford, and there's a reason that I left the world of finance.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I feel really happy for all those students who get to have that experience. It's amazing.
No, thank you for that.
So I'm curious also about just, you know, when you sort of made that switch and said, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I promised myself, I promised other people I was going to do it. Did you ever question yourself or feel like, am I doing the right thing?
No, I mean, you know, people thought I was crazy, right? They're like, wait, Joe, like, you know, a lot of people in our society, right? American society, they value money, right? And they connect money with happiness, wealth, with success and all that. And some of my friends like actually sat me down and were like, Joe, like, this is how much a teacher makes. This is how much you're making. This is how much you are going to make. Like, are you like, just look at the number. I don't know if anyone showed you this. And it's like, well, ha ha ha. I'm the finance guy in our crew over here. So I actually know this. But you know, all kidding around aside, it was one of those moments where for me, it was never about the money. Mm-hmm. I've never been one to really care about money. And I know that's a very privileged thing to say, right? Because I am well educated and I had supportive parents my whole life, and not everyone gets to say that. But at the same token, I knew that I had a passion and a promise. And the first day being in that classroom in Brooklyn, where I'm from, my youngest daughter is named, I felt myself. There was no hesitation. There was no regret. There is no regret on my end. And I remember my first year teaching, my principal called me in and she said, I worked in a pretty tough tier one New York City school, where there was some gang violence in the school, and she told me, and she said, you know, I didn't really think when I first met you that you were going to be what you are with these students. She's like, I even heard that you go down to where they live and you play basketball with them after school, and that you go into their homes and you're tutoring them. And, you know, I wouldn't advise that because they don't live in safe neighborhoods. And, you know, you give the students chemicals and because I was teaching science to mix and this and that. And, you know, I would advise you against that if you asked me. And I said, listen, if you're going to treat a student one way, they're going to act one way. Mm-hmm. If you're going to treat a student like you would treat any other student in any other school district that does not have gang violence in their school, they're, you know, they deserve the same respect that I deserve and that the principal deserves, right, that I was talking to. So it was one of those things where it was just important to me because I knew how I felt when I was treated differently, right, because of whatever my behaviors were, or because maybe, you know, my parents didn't complain to the school I come from. You know, I'm a first-generation American, proud of it. I think that, you know, even the students were surprised. They're like, you know, mister, like, you're giving us, like, time to like move our seats and pick our partners and work with these chemicals and do this and do that. And like, you're handing out scissors. I think there's a school policy about handing out scissors. I was like, don't worry about that. Don't worry about the school policy about handing out scissors. Like, it's all good here. Like, I trust you guys. Like, you're not going to do anything. And if you need to cut somebody, just come up and cut me. It's fine. My looks have faded. So like, you know, just say things like that. And the kids like crack up and they think like it's so ridiculous. And, that they were actually treated a certain way in the other classrooms. And my again, during my first year, you know, there was a vibe in the school that was different, that, you know, the principal was having, like, and I'm not trying to say this to toot my own horn here, but, you know, veteran teachers say, you know, you got to go visit the new teacher's Joe's class. Like, he's really changing the game for these students. You know, they're, you know, pretty much the directive in the school was to make sure the students don't get into a fight. Step one, don't worry about really teaching the content. Classroom management is key. Make sure they don't get into a fight. I never focused on that because, you know, I was a firm believer in just to educate them. That's what a teacher should be doing, is to educate them. And if something happened, to talk to them about it. Like, I wasn't filling out a form. You know, I remember there was an incident in my classroom, my first year teaching, and the student had so much respect for me. He's like, Mr. Engelhardt, I am so, so, so sorry that I did this in your class. I should have waited till What's Your Face's class to do it. And I said, no, it's all good. It's all good. Let's understand why you did it. And he's like, well, I know you got to fill out one of those forms. And my mom, she's working two jobs right now. I said, what? I'm like, I'm not filling out a form. I'm like, why can't you and I just talk about it? Mm-hmm. And I know that there were some teachers who were like, Joe doesn't follow the rule. Talk to the kids and get to know them, and you know, he should be holding them like we are, and this holding them accountable like we are, and what the rule book says. And I don't know anybody in life who wants to follow or follows the rule book to a T, right? I don't know anybody. None of my friends drive the speed limit every single day. So I think it goes back to respect for the students, and I think, you know, if you take that ego and that power that you have as a teacher, kind of accept that at the door, and just come in. And I know that there's a saying like, oh, you shouldn't be nice till December break or something to students, or you shouldn't be friendly with students. And I never subscribed to that, because that's not me as a person. That's not why I got into it. I got into it to educate students and just to be that role model. And just going back to that situation I was talking about with the student, his behavior changed like immediately in all his classes. And he's like, oh, you know, they had their notebooks out. What did you do with Jamal?
What'd you say to him? What's your magic bullet?
Well, may sound crazy, but I stayed after school and spoke to him.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, like, just mind-blowing, right? And it was one of those things where, like, no, what did you say? What did you do? Like, how did you get to him at that level? He's so disrespectful. I'm like, he's not disrespectful to me. And maybe if he's being disrespectful to you, you need to self-reflect on that one, right? And I think that as adults, not just in education, we don't do that enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot going on for everybody, so it's really hard to, but I think that's the key to success. And no matter what we do, is just be reflective And just that golden rule, treat others how you want to be treated, and just understand their perspective, their lived experience, and that we're all not the same.
I know. Because we oftentimes, right, like we know our own experience the best, obviously. Like it's, we know everything there is to know. So we want other people to kind of view us and understand that when we mess up or, you know, have a learning experience, not a mistake.
Exactly.
But then we're not so quick to give that to other people. And, you know, I think about that a lot also. Like there's so much we don't know that's below the surface. And sometimes it's just a matter of asking the question and you might get there and figure it out. But even if you don't ask the question, just to just acknowledge and understand that there is something beneath that surface helps you to interact with that person in a different way. So we always like to ask people if there is some quote or song or poem or scripture or something that kind of helps them to make meaning from their experiences, or that, you know, just kind of reflects their purpose. So curious if you have one.
Being from Brooklyn, I subscribe to a lot of Christopher Wallace's lyrics, otherwise known as Biggie Smalls. And there's a song, Sky's the Limit.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics in there really resonate with me, you know, just, you know, live life, sky's the limit. And kind of take life and run with it, right? Because we as far as we know, right? We're here once. And if we could impact others in a positive way, and we could resonate and our message stays with others, then we could live forever.
I think that's really beautiful, because it's not, you're not saying, oh, the sky's the limit and look what I've done. You're like, the sky's the limit. How can I convey that message to other people who don't see that in themselves? And I think that's amazing. So,
and how you can bring other people up with you as well. Like making these positive changes in so many people's lives just by what happened to you when you were 19 years old. I think your friends are right. I think you got a book deal. I also think you have a pretty good shot at a movie deal here too. I've seen the framework of this movie a couple of times. I think we got a winner here.
Yeah, I know.
We could talk about
it. We'll promote it. you've got some big fans now. We're in your corner.
Absolutely.
So, but thank you so much for, you know, for coming and talking with us. This has been fantastic. And I think I can't wait for people to hear it. And I hope that other people are inspired to look at kids and teenagers and even adults through that lens also.
No, I do too. And if my story and what I do inspires one student, one person, then it's a win.
Well, you've inspired two right here. So you're winning already.
Thank you so much. And
thank you too.
A pleasure and an honor to be on. I really do appreciate the opportunity.
Every night some rain must fall. Learn to live and rise above it all. As hopeless as it seems, don't let anyone be stepping on your dreams, and keep it on the positive side. Keep it on the positive side. Keep it on the positive side. Caught up in the negative, such a waste of time. Oh, it's no way to live. Got to learn to love yourself before you give that love to anybody else. Keep it on the positive side.